How'd you do the Mama Comas, by the way? It was good. How far did everyone get?
Halfway through Tosfos.
Halfway through Tosfos. Okay, so you have enough to take you through tomorrow. Okay, so essentially we're going to do some related topics. Going to involve us skipping around a little bit, but the concept is going to bring us to a little bit later in the parak. And you know, maybe we'll decide that'll be the last that we do for this parak before switching over to Hakone. So we'll have to see, maybe with the Chena is a good time for a dividing line. We'll have seen a lot of this parak. But essentially the question of Uber comes up in a few places. So as you got to see a little bit this morning, there is a sugya which is sometimes explicit in the Gemara, sometimes not explicit in the Gemara, sometimes is apparently under the surface, no pun intended. But the role of Uber as Yerechimo or not Yerechimo, that's something that has implications all over Shas. And it can really give you many more Maamar Kamos to show you Gemaras and Mishnayos that are relevant. We only are coming at it from a few angles, and we're going to try to keep it relatively limited in the interest of time. But the topic connects, and later Gemaras in this parak also connect, so it's also an occasion to bring this up, to the topic of abortion. It connects literally. It certainly has a practical connection, but also, we'll see, it connects philosophically a little bit also, because the issue of abortion, which a major issue in halacha, and of course a major issue in American society, and has been for a very long time, but is rising to the surface again now as well. It's become a major debate in New York State and elsewhere in other areas over the past few weeks because of new laws that have tremendous implications in that area. And of course, Roe v. Wade has already for more than 40 years been one of the most controversial Supreme Court rulings, and it affects everything because every time a new justice is appointed to the Supreme Court, the big question is always, is he going to uphold Roe v. Wade? Is he going to overturn Roe v. Wade? Abortion is a tremendously controversial topic in halacha, in American society, and in everywhere else. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but there are core philosophical issues that are interwoven with the halachic issues. In American politics, it gets tied up with slogans of pro-life and pro-choice. And of course, slogans are slogans. People always use the phrases that highlight what they think is most helpful to their cause. But in this area especially, both words carry a certain connotation, and they may transcend their details. You know, so for the question, if your question is, are you pro-allowing for abortion or are you anti-allowing for abortion? So that might implicate, that might imply things one way, while if you're phrasing it pro-life or pro-choice, that already brings a whole other package of attitudes which have halachic connections to them, and there are issues within halacha and hashkafa that have to be addressed once you start looking at that terminology. So, God willing, we'll get to see a little bit about that again. Clearly a huge topic. We're going to try to keep it limited to a few days. But it just, in addition to whatever practical relevance it has to the question of Uber Yerechimo, it also, there are philosophical questions when you talk about whether this is an issue about the mother's body, or is it something that transcends the mother's body, which is a part of the dialogue in the political scene. You know, are we saying that, oh, if you make regulations about abortion, you're telling a woman what she can or can't do with her body? So it's not irrelevant here in terms of the language. Is that essentially how we view an Uber, as a part of the mother's body, or is it something more than that? Is it something different than that? And that's very, very much connected to this. So we're going to use our home sugi here of Membav Mibbeis, Memzayin Amud Aleph, and launch from there, because the Rishonim bring up this issue, and then bring it into later in the parak, where we'll see there are more direct references and try to get a little bit of a perspective on some of these topics. And as we often do, so today, starting a new topic, we'll probably just get some of the issues onto the table, and hopefully tomorrow or the next day we'll be able to advance it a little bit more. So how does it come up in our Gemara? It comes up because the Mishnah talks about situations where you have a cow that gives birth, and we don't know when. And we know that this cow was involved in a altercation, in a fatal altercation with another cow, and it could be as the aggressor, it could be as the victim. We have both scenarios. And the question is, let's say if this cow was the aggressor, and there is also a vlad, there is also a offspring that is found, so do we assume that the liability goes to both? And if so, why should that be? So there is a whole big back and forth in the Gemara, which you're familiar with. We won't go through all of that together, but we'll zero in on one line that appears in Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says, "Amar Rava," this is five lines down from the top, in Zayin Amud Aleph, "Parah Shezika Gova Mivlada," that if a para does damage, we can collect not only from it, but also from its vlad. So my taima gufahi. Why is that true? Because the vlad is a part of it. Is that the good translation? Or part of its body? How would you translate that phrase?
Body
itself. Is that particularly significant to emphasize the kind of the physicality? It might be. So, is this Gemara taking a stance on the Shas question over Yarachimo, over Lav Yarachimo? Definitely? Okay, so if I already kind of clued you in, that it's probably not definitely, right? So, that's ready. Yeah, Joe, what would you like to say?
It could be maybe that. Just like practically speaking, the vlad is just part of the impact of the goring. It's just heavier now. It's a stronger impact. Maybe that contributes to it, but it's not that it necessarily is a part of the.
Okay, you're saying very interesting things. Okay, you're saying that, but you're actually talking about its literal impact and weight. That's an interesting thing to consider. Maury, what did you want to?
The line in the Gemara is mentioned in the context of considering where the payment is going to come from. So it might just mean gufahi, that it's considered to be the par's body, and then we'll draw funds from it in order to pay for the chatzinezer.
And therefore, you're limiting its application.
Right. I would define it as just an extension of a bank account. I think Jed and I actually both.
Okay, so, and that's why I was actually asking Tola before. He said that you're emphasizing the physicality, that's physically a part of the. So here, if you saw a Tosfos here, on there's two my timers, as you've noticed, but the first my timer, this was, if I just put my time in the Mar Makomos, so how did you know to do the first one? Well, yeah, it's talking about it, that's a clue, but how else? And so you have two tosfos and you could do. So right, she'll certainly do the first of the mitzvah to do the tosfos. So there's a whole discussion why we don't observe Purim in this past month. Right? I think Amara says maybe you should mavir and ala mitzvah. So you should do the first tosfos, that might be a candidate. So tosfos essentially is addressing the question I just asked you, when I said it's not definitely. That the topic of Tosfos is essentially, is this taking a stand on Ober Yerachimo or not? The fact, this statement in the Gemara, that Gufahi, is that the same thing as saying Ober Yerachimo? So let's take a step back before, and admittedly not knowing anything, but just seeing that phrase, it might be helpful just to try to understand what we want to figure out so that we can maybe see if there are categories for things. What exactly does that question mean to you? Ober Yerachimo, Ober Lav Yerachimo. What do you think the words mean?
Is the fetus, or is the child considered to be part of the fetus, I guess?
The same entity.
The same entity. Okay. Is the fetus the same entity as the mother? Jed?
Yeah, no, I was just trying to translate it literally. Like, the fetus is the thigh of its mother.
Okay. So what would that mean if to say that it is the thigh of the mother?
Yeah, I guess that it's a part of the mother.
So it doesn't have its own independent life?
Doesn't have its own independent life. Okay, so one way to look at it is like that. You know, do we see it as having an independent life, independent existence? You could even see it maybe as coming from another direction. You know, it seems like the surface reaction you'd have is that along the lines of what all of you have said. Is it considered to be a part of the mother? Or is it considered to be its own thing? But you could also ask it maybe from a different direction. That is it considered to be a part of the mother? Or is it considered to not even be that? In other words, what happens to the mother, does that happen to the Vlad also? Or maybe not just because it's independent, but maybe it's not even independent. Maybe it's not even considered to be like the mother's limbs, and it's simply not included in whatever happens to the mother because it doesn't have anything. In other words, it could be too independent, or it could be not independent enough. It could be so independent that it's separate, or it could be nothing. And it might be that not every sugi is working off the same definition. Yeah.
Are there real nafkaminas for that though?
So what would you think? So what are nafkaminas bichlal of this question? Okay, so one is nezikin is what we're seeing here, right? Nezikin meaning for the purposes of collecting from the damages that the mother did. Right? So Maury's pointing out a fascinating one also, if you got a chance to see the Gemara in Yevamos. I don't know if the guys got up that far or not. Right? But what happens if you have this could have major practical ramifications. And hopefully we'll get into this a little bit. What happens if a pregnant woman converts? She goes to the mikveh. So the Gemara says that the child who's born later does not need to go to the mikveh separately. But we'll see the whole discussion why that is. Is that because uber yarechimo? Or could that be true even uber lav yarechimo? What other differences could it make?
If you kill the Uber without damaging or killing the mother?
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, are you chayav misa for killing something? Is it like you did nothing? Or is it like you kill something that doesn't exist? Or did you just chayav normal nezik? Is it damaging the Uber?
Okay, so we know it doesn't seem like you chayav misa.
Right.
Right, but or at least gets a little complicated. Maybe a major distinction here between Bnei Noach and Jews, which is both very fascinating possibility for its implications all over, but it also greatly complicates the discussion that we mentioned before, the political discussion in the United States, that the thought that there may actually be a greater severity for Bnei Noach to engage in abortion than there is for Jews is something which impacts on that whole discussion. But okay, so what happens if one were to target the Vlad for being killed? Can you think of any other nafkaminas? Happens to be there are a lot of nafkaminas throughout Shas. Some of them are a little bit obscure. They're a little hard to come up with on your own. Jacob?
Tosa brings up if the status of the mother changes, does that status also apply to the Uber when it's born? Also, does it matter?
So what kind of status, for example, are you talking?
Like Yerba or
okay.
Shrefa?
Okay. Like right. Now, those might be two very different things, as we'll see.
Right.
Right, but let's say if the mother was subject to bestiality, so would that be a status that affects a Vlad also? That's one question. Or what if the mother becomes a trefa? All right, so let's say, for example, if therefore she's not valid for a korban, if we're talking about an animal, so would the Vlad be also considered a trefa as far as a korban is concerned? That's Gemara's and Masachis Tmura and elsewhere. Yeah.
Just like in general, like a ben pekua, like that the mother's shachet, so the...
Okay, so the shchita of that, and we know that didn't exist, it didn't have ben pekua, right? That's a shchita of the mother is effective for the Vlad, so how does that fit in here? What does that tell us about the whole story? It's also interesting. Hi.
So it comes up in like it said the mother was set aside for a chatas. There's a different type of program.
Yeah, so just to clarify, that Gemara, that's the Gemara appears in Maseches Tzemuru also. It's a machlokus in the Gemara. It's a little complicated. The question is, what would the status, what potential possibilities are there for the of an animal that's set aside as a chatas? What potential possibilities are there for the vlad? Because normally the idea would be that a vlad chatas, you can't do anything with, really. It was basically has to just die because the hektish is chal in it, but they can't use it as a chattis, because the chattis is not a nedava. A chattis isn't something that you can just give extra. A chattis has to be associated with an actual chet. So it gets complicated. So the other possibility here is that what somebody can do, what happens, let's say there were two grown animals, and somebody was makdish both of them for a chattis. So you can't, again, just keep adding on animals for chatas. It's not a voluntary korban. So the assumption would be that what he's doing is he's setting aside one for achrayas. That if something should happen to the first animal, so then the second animal would be also valid for this. So that's a possibility here also, that it could be that if you have a pregnant animal that is set aside for chatas, and then the animal gives birth, maybe either one could serve as the chattis. So that's also connected to the Uber Yerachimo question. So what else? What other kinds of nafkaminas might there be? Any other thoughts? Yeah? Right? Right, to start with that one. Anything else?
Can you own the Uber independently of the mother?
Can you own the Uber? So that seems like you can, which is also interesting. Right, and that's how, because our Gemara is talking about that, if the vlad is owned by one person and the mother is owned by, so it seems that you can. Now, does that contradict anything? Not clear. But there are, for example, if you wanted to talk about that in terms of a normal limb of a human being, would there be any issue there? That's something we have to figure out. There are a few other sugars I didn't even put on the list, all the different Gemaras you could be looking at, because it would take a long time. But there's a Gemara in Gittin that talks about if somebody is Meshacher, a pregnant Eved, and not Meshacher the Vlad, so would that be considered half of a Shichur, which is a problem? Or is that two independent acts? Or let's say if you have a pregnant woman and the vlad is no longer alive. So does that, it was a sugya in Daf Yomi about 3 weeks ago. Those of you who are holding in the chulin. So there are a couple of gemaras in the chulin that are relevant, but there was a Daf Yomi about 3 weeks ago about, let's say, would the vlad convey tuma to the mother?
What if the mother's chayv misa?
Oh, so that's a Gemara in Erevin. That's a Gemara in Erchen, rather. It's an interesting discussion about confusing Erchen and Erevin. It's for a different time. That's a Gemara in Erchen. It's a Gemara in Erchen that talks about that. And what would you think about that? So if the mother is Chayiv Misa, what should you do? So that's a discussion. God willing, we'll get to that. That gets more into the abortion discussion. So there's a lot that theoretically could come up. So let me ask you the following question before looking a little bit at this Tosus. So, how are you going to decide this? What's this machlokus about? Why, apparently it's machlokus in the level of Amoroim, it's machlokus in the level of Rishonim, we'll see. So then presumably it's machlokus in Psak as well. And what we'll also see is that it seems like there isn't one answer to the question. That for some dinim it might be one thing, and for some dinim it might be another thing. So, what drives one to say one way or another? So you can see his question. Look, what's the question? What's the question at hand? Why would you say one way or the other? Zan?
Can you put a dim over someone like that? Put into a scenario. Like if I put into a scenario by force, do they have to take that dim?
Okay, that's interesting. It's not going to necessarily affect everything, but some of the cases it'll be relevant to, right? That if there's a status which implies some kind of responsibility, so can you assign that responsibility to the Vlad? Which is interesting, because from our Gemara it sounds like you can, right? And I'll tell you, here's another thing I didn't put on the Mar Makomos, but there is a discussion in the Achronim. This may help frame things a little bit also, that the Gemara earlier, we didn't really see this Gemara so much. I think we talked about it in other contexts, but the Gemara talks about a shor ha'it stadin, that let's say you have an ox which wouldn't by nature be a violent ox, but somewhere in the third part, but they trained it to be a contest. They trained it to be a competing violent ox. So the Gemara says there is the patur for that ox. Because the Torah says, Kiigach, Velosh Yigichu Acherim, that it has to be that he's responsible, the animal is responsible for its goring, if that's what it chooses to do. But if people train it to do that, so then he's not responsible. So there are achronim who ask, and maybe we'll see how much time we can talk about this. So that's a little strange, right? You're telling me that if you have a grown ox that can make its own decisions like any responsible ox, but people train it and direct it to gore, so then it's going to be pater. So where does the Vlad fit in this? Right, that the Vlad that was an innocent pre-born animal, that bears responsibility for what the mother did, but this fully grown ox doesn't because other people are involved?
Yeah. Similar to like a discussion around dangerous animals.
Maybe. But
like I said, it's kind of like they're now in nature or whatever, they're putter of it.
So that's a separate question in terms of how that fits in. But here, what's just interesting is that we're saying that if people train the animal to be a goring animal, that's kind of an excuse for that animal. And here we're saying that an animal that has no maturity whatsoever hasn't been born yet. But because it was inside the mother's body, you can't hold somebody responsible for what they did in the womb. And yet, that animal is going to be more liable than a fully born animal that was trained by others, and therefore it's their fault. It's a little bit surprising. So Achronim do struggle with that. You know, just conceptually, what are we saying? If you want to say that we have some kind of status that's attached to the Vlad, like what are we saying that it bears responsibility? Obviously, when we talk about responsibility by animals, we're talking about a different standard to begin with, but you know, we do find that there is some possibility of an exemption for an animal that was acting because it was compelled to. So the Vlad was not compelled, the Vlad had free will. It's somewhat striking. Yeah, Jed?
So couldn't it just be, again, like what I said before, that really the impact of the at least in that particular case, the impact of the Vlad.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. So therefore it's not their fault, it's not the Vlad's fault, but the Vlad, practically speaking, played a role here, actually. Not just technically, but actually the animal was more dangerous because the Vlad was inside of it, so therefore it's an interesting thought to see if there's any basis for that.
And the other thing I was gonna ask is how does the Tarnagoles come into play here also? The
Gemara differentiates between the two.
Yeah.
Right, so that's also worth noting, right? That if it's a chicken or something like that, so apparently an egg has a whole different status than a Vlad does. Why? The Gemara distinguishes between them. What does that distinction mean? It's a real chicken and egg question. So what I would like to think about for a second is how would you think before seeing any Gemaras or anything, how would you start to answer this question? If somebody asked you, tell me, what's your opinion? Over Yarchimo, over Lav Yarchimo? What kind of question is that? Is it a Metzius question? Is it a philosophical question? It really does go to the whole abortion issue on some level. It really does, in a not superficial way, connect to the whole philosophical discussion that's going on in America right now. What's the core of that question? Sorry? What drives you? Why would you say one way or the other? Are there different mesorahs on this? Is it like a halacha Moshe Mitzinai? Okay, so let's start with that. So you're asking when you say alive or not alive, you're saying it's a viable fetus.
Yes.
Right? You're not talking about a fetus that may literally not be alive. You're saying it's a viable fetus. Is it alive or is it not alive? What does that mean?
Medically?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know anything.
So the question, but how would you answer the question? Like, how would you, Shmuley?
It's like independent sustainability.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's onto something. So, but just say, we try to use it in a whole sentence. That's an interesting phrase, but I'm saying, so what do you want to do with that phrase?
I would say that a living organism, I would say, has power to live on its own, separate from any entity as the mother in this case.
Mm-hmm.
If the fetus in this case, I guess, a thing, for lack of better words, that is sustainable without the mother. So as in, depending on the time or behavior, that let's say, you know, like a premature birth, that thing is still living. It could be detached from its life source.
Okay, so you're asking a question with a practical Metzius factor. So you want to draw a line between would it be viable outside or not be viable outside?
Okay.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because we don't know if that matters or not. Now, it's true that within the whole history of abortion laws, you will certainly find that factor invoked. Right, that maybe should we draw a distinction between that which could survive outside the womb and that which couldn't. And that's a part of the reaction to the recent New York laws. You know, the notion that the only thing that should make a difference, whether you can, for lack of a better term, kill this entity or not, is just whether it's inside or outside. But all of the same potential is there. All of the same, not just potential, all the same actual is there. That a day later it could have been born, and then it would be a human being according to everybody. So is that the issue? All right.
But then it becomes hard to distinguish between whether, say, it could live, but it depends on other things. Even after it... Even after a baby is born, if it's not fed by its mother, cared for by its mother, it's still dependent on.
Right, but that's true about everybody, right? So everybody at any stage of life.
Right, but then you have the same thing. Where, like, I'm thinking from a halachic standpoint, there's someone who's on life support, so they definitely can't live by themselves. And
mm-hmm.
Was back, no one said you'd be allowed to kill someone like that. Or you're allowed to.
So you,
responsible for their actions. Even.
Right, I wouldn't say no one. You know, that gets into a big discussion on the other end. And they're not unrelated, you know, the whole question of the definition of death and the definition of life, definition of birth and the definition of death, they do connect. And it's not 100% clear if there's only one way to see it. So Shmuley is invoking something, whether he meant to or not, which you might say, well, it's going to depend. Sometimes over Yarchimo, sometimes over not Yarchimo. That maybe it all depends on what level it's reached. Like I said, that certainly has factored in, if we want to abstract it as a philosophical question, right? Certainly there are laws and places in the world where they've decided that, okay, if it's a viable fetus by itself, so then for sure we should see that as separate and we shouldn't allow abortion. But if it wouldn't be viable by itself, maybe we shouldn't see it as separate. Right?
Maybe it's more of a philosophical distinction about whether we view it as it is now or whether we view what it's going to be.
Okay, so that's a good question also. There are some who see it like that. Right? There are some who see it like maybe if we know that this is destined by the natural process of life to take on its own identity. So do we see that identity as there now, or do we say that doesn't matter? Right now it's inside the mother, it's part of the mother. So you have at least two possible mahalchim in what was just mentioned in the past few minutes. One question is, just to also flesh out a little bit more what Shmuley was getting at, is right now this fetus is drawing life from being a part of the mother's body. So therefore, does that make it a part of the mother's body? Or should we say, no, it doesn't matter that right now it is drawing nourishment from the mother's body, but Lamaisa, it's forming as a separate entity that will be able to sustain itself ultimately, and therefore that's considered to be independent. Or should we say, closer to what Jed was just saying, that maybe it's a question of, do we look at what is now or do we look at what is destined to be? That since the clear path is towards independent existence, so therefore that's the way we should see it? Or, no, it doesn't matter what the future is supposed to be, al pi derech hateva, but what is now is what matters. Hi.
Or why can you just say, just based off what is now from a medical standpoint, whether, I don't know, in halach, whether there's a heart, whether there's a pulse, or whether, I mean, not a pulse, but whether there's a brain or something like that that has that type of dominance, even though it's not, forgetting what it will be in the future, and forgetting whether it can live by itself, even just from, like, it has a heart, so, or it has a heartbeat, or it has a body or something like that, so it's considered halachically alive.
See, but that's what gets a little complicated, because the question, and this is very much an issue on the other side also, it's about the whole brain death question and the question of end of life. So the medical assessment can tell us what's there and can tell us what is and can tell us what the facts are and perhaps what the next stage will be. But it's not necessarily the whole story that'll tell us how the halacha should view it, unless we can figure out what role halacha want, like what does halacha want to see from these things? Does halacha want to look for viability? Does it want to look for some kind of independent formation? Then we could ask the doctors to say, okay, tell me what's happening here. Or, you know, for example, the end of life question. So in order to know what to do with the medical assessment, we have to know, what does the halacha want to see? Does the halacha want to know, is the situation reversible? Does the halacha want to know if the different parts of the body are acting independently? Does the halacha want to know other questions? So it might be that we have to be able to separate the two and figure out what is the halacha interested in before knowing what to do with the medical assessment. So these are some of the possible things that are going to affect what we're looking for in this sugya. So now, just a few minutes that we have, just to highlight some lines and toasts here that help give us some perspective. So, Tosfos quotes, just to read quickly, that here our Gemara had said gufa. So, what does that mean? So, does that tell us that there is a status of uber yarechimo? So, Tosfos picks up on Rava here and also Rava elsewhere. In the context of Nirva also. And Tosfos says, Ein lehochiach d'ubar yarechimo. Doesn't tell us for sure that the ubar is considered to be a part of the mother. Why? Because Hasam Hainu Taima Shavlad Atmo Nenem Revia. Vihi Vivladcha Vihi Vivlada Nagchu Vinirbu. So that itself doesn't necessarily tell us anything. Because when the animal itself is partaking of the experience, so maybe it means that the Vlad is also partaking of the experience, so we don't know. Ach mishmaisim, but from our Gemara, yesh lo chiyach, techilas lepar l'shtalim mishtalim in avlad. But what about the fact in our Gemara that it says that if we can't take payment from the par, we can take it from the Vlad apparently equally. V'yem lav yarech imo, lav mishtalim mivlad chelko v'chela kapara. And if you're going to say that the Vlad is not a part of the mother, it's not like the thigh of the mother, so why should we take the payment from the Vlad and take corresponding to the whole animal, chalko v'chela kapara? Atu shnei shvarim tamim sheziku. Let's say you have two short times that they did the hezek together. So never echad mehen, we have mishalim chalko v'chela kaveru. So if one of them got lost, we say the other one should pay for both of them? For two separate entities. Where we say, okay, we take the whole thing from whichever one we can get. But then Tosfos goes on to note that the Gemara in Chulin that we mentioned, the one that was Daf Yomi 3 weeks ago, seems to give you a different impression. Because the Gemara there talks about the possibility of the mother becoming Tamei from the deceased Uber. And whether there are other factors that stop that from happening until later. So what is it? So here Tosa says, Omerid v'chol makom uber yarech imohu. That really, what's the klal? Uber yarech imohu. That's the Ri's opinion. Levad le'inyin treifa. With the exception of treifa, why dekevan sheyesh lo chiyus b'fnei atzmo? Since the whole point of a treifa is that it's not going to live. And here, the child has its own independent potential to live. So close. Lekel ha-mehmar, shenitra femimo. Doesn't make sense to say that the status of treifa that happened to the mother happens to the uber also, because the whole point of treifa is not going to survive, and here there's independent existence. The chain halach the b'chamakum uber yarechimahu levar mitreifa. Okay, so that is the view of three. All right, so the rest of the Tosfos you will see. We'll get a chance to look at it a little bit tomorrow, but we'll see also that the Rebbeinu Tam disagrees. That this is a machlokas rishonim, at least between the Ri and Rebbeinu Tam. The Rambam's opinion is subject of much discussion. And what we see here clearly also is that it seems to be we have to be ready for different dinim to have different answers. And it might be, it depends very much on what exactly are the considerations within each situation. Okay, so far so good. So just to quickly recap, very briefly. So we spoke about how the question of abortion that we'll discuss later, but also many other questions in Shas are certainly affected, even if they're not fully decided, by the issue of Uber Yerech Imo. And there's a lot we don't know about Uber Yerech Imo. We don't know if that means even to say that the Yerech and the Uber is the mother's body itself as opposed to being an independent existence? Or is it possible maybe even that the Uber would be less, would be not independent but not even enough to be considered a limb of the mother, so that what happens to the mother doesn't necessarily happen to the Uber? We saw there are many places in Shas where it comes up. It comes up not explicitly in our Gemara, we've shown to bring it up, but possibly in our Gemara about this question of taking payment from the Uber, and comes up in the context of the Gemara in Gittin about being Meshacher and Eved, comes up in the Gemara's in Tmura about a Vlad of Achatas, what status does it have? It comes up in the Gemara in Chulin about the Tuma of a mother, potentially, if the Vlad inside of her is no longer alive. It comes up in the Gemara in Yevamos. We'll talk about a lot more, God willing, about whether the Tvila of a mother, L'shem Geiris, what exactly impact does that have on the child, and in many other cases. And we tried to figure out what exactly should be the defining issues here. And we saw a couple of perspectives. We saw that it could be an issue of, do we look at its independent sustainability, as to use Shmuley's phrase, do we look at that as the key issue, that should give it independent existence? Or what about the fact that still right now it is connected nutritionally to the mother? And is there room to distinguish between something, between a vlad that would theoretically be able to survive as is and one that wouldn't? Certainly philosophically that discussion has been brought in. And or the question of, do we look at what's destined to be in the future, or do we look only at what is now? And we saw that our Tosfos brings in the topic in trying to figure out our Gemara and the implications of our Gemara, and our Tosfos tells us the view of the Ri, that the general klal is uber yarechimo, and the only exception is treifa, because when it comes to treifa, the whole issue is whether it'll survive or not, and therefore, since it has independent existence, it should not be associated with the treifas of the mother. And we'll see that Rabbeinu Tam takes a different view, and the Rambam is the subject of much discussion. Okay, so God willing, we'll pick up with this tomorrow. Who wants to daven mincha for us?
All right, Jay, you've been lucky.